Hello and welcome to the Super Show podcast. Today, I'm your host, Alex Jones. But this today is also the Old Jamaican Ginger Beer podcast because I'm rocking a bit of a weird drink as we jump into this one. Just,
I'm going to have to say, not an official sponsor. If they want to actually sponsor us, please do reach out. We would accept almost anything. I just want to be clear that Jonesy's just endorsing that product because he likes it.
And if you're listening into this and not looking at it, those were the dulcet tones of my co-host and my partner in crime, Jamie. Today is going to be a bit of a dirty, a bit of a tight, quick, condensed podcast for a couple of reasons. It's not been the best week for video game news, as I'm sure a lot of you may be aware. Also, Jamie and I both just got back from our travels. We've been off to different places, not together, unfortunately. And so we're feeling it a little bit, but I'm glad that you've decided to join us for this podcast. If you're on YouTube and checking us out over there, where you can looking at us right now, if you are live, like many people in the chat are right now, I'm going to give a shout out to you guys in a minute. Or indeed, if you are listening to us on podcasting platforms, we are on all of them. We're all the major platforms. I'm talking Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts. You can also reach out to us on X at Super Show Pod. And we have a Discord that you can go over and you can at us. And if you at us, it actually does ping up on my phone. I don't know about yours. And then I immediately have to be like, oh, someone's added me on Discord. I'm going to have to see what they're saying.
Really? It doesn't pop on my phone. I have the same rules for Discord as I do for kind of work communication apps like Slack or Teams, depending on what your workplace prefers, which is that I feel like if I let myself have it on my phone, I've just opened up this whole Pandora's box of mess that I just don't need. Checking things on a weekend, knowing that I could maybe log off my computer because if someone messages me, like, I just don't need that stress. And which isn't to say that looking at Discord is stress, but it is still sometimes a thing that I need to remind myself to do.
Right.
I'm just not a natural Discord user, Josie. It doesn't come naturally to me to open Discord the second I set my computer. I don't know why.
I like Discord, but I do mostly check it out on my phone. But no, yeah, so if you're on our Discord and if you want to send, if you want to get our attention, hop over into the podcast AMA channel and at us, or indeed in one of the other ones, and at me, I should say, I may well respond.
I would also say, make a special note of what time it is locally in the UK. And if you live in an extreme time zone, we now know that we can at Jonesy at the small hours of the morning and get his phone pinging at 2, 3, 4 a.m. UK time.
Doesn't ping.
Just sounds hilarious.
Doesn't ping.
The ping is mysteriously gone now that I'm trying to set you up.
It just does a little a number in the corner so I can see how many messages that I have missed. Okay. But I am going to give a shout out to people in the chat right now. We've got Magni, Colin Few, The Funky Penguin, Jesper Cam is in there, Rodrigo, Randall Flag, AIM is in there as well, and Pastor's Guild. Thank you so much for joining us, everybody. A lot of people saying that they haven't been able to catch us live for a while and they're excited to be here. We're excited to have you here. I'm gonna as well give you a little tease up, because AIM, you're saying that headline looks interesting. We will indeed be talking about the leak of the Spider-Man co-op, now cancelled game, unfortunately, from Insomniac. We will also be talking about Warner Brothers and their decision to start delisting some games that were published by Adult Swim originally and that they're now taking off of the Steam listings. Unfortunately, some developers and some studios feeling pretty annoyed about that one. Jamie, before we do that, though.
Yeah.
No.
I was going to say, where's he going with this?
Let's crack on.
Is he about to segue into another unpaid for promotion for Old Jamaica Ginger Beer? Because if so, I'm really going to have to find a way to stop him. It's out of control.
Do you know what I was going to do? Because we've only got two news stories this week, I was thinking that maybe I'll ask you what you've been up to. But I was like, do you know what? Maybe we'll just forego that altogether this week because I don't think either of us have been up to much anyway.
Do you know what sums it up? I got a code for WWE at some point last week and I installed it and I haven't launched that game. I haven't turned my PS5 on since that code came through. Such has been the nature of the traveling and the commitments we've had over the past handful of days. But I look forward to letting everyone know how flowy Triple H's hair looks, how glistening the sweat is, and how accurate the created character wrestler versions of Chris Benoit are all, when I can confirm those facts, having played the game, in the coming days. So stay tuned for that. Any Chris Benoit fans out there, your time is now.
John Cena was a wrestler, wasn't he? He was a WWE wrestler.
I think John Cena still technically would say he is a wrestler. I think he would identify. He has, much like The Rock, he has other, irons and other fires. But then I say that, The Rock, despite the fact that he's out there and was at the Oscars the other night, The Rock's like wrestling now. The Rock's involved, very actively involved in a current storyline in the build-up to WrestleMania, I believe.
The only reason I was invoking John Cena was because I saw him pop up on my timeline because he got naked at the Oscars, I believe it was, to give out an award for best costume. And I was like, okay, first off, dude looks amazing. He's got to be 50, something like that. Like, that's stack.
I'll look him up.
That stack is working hard. But no, he looks fantastic. But at the same time, I was like, is that a good thing to do at the Oscars, to like, as a bit of a thing that people can remember and mention? Or does it devalue the Oscars a little bit, Jamie, because they're supposed to be high end and you've got an almost new John Cena? Ironically, we could see him. I just have to put that out.
Yeah. First of all, I would just say 46, so damn near 50 and look incredible for it. Although incredible in that, with that kind of asterisk next to it, which is like, this is a guy who clearly is like at or near sort of like physical peak, but also aging out of that, chapter of his life. And so some of the definition just looks a little bit off, a little bit kind of like a weird, like those body suits that Keanu Reeves and his pal wore in that last Bill and Ted film when they had to be ripped in. Like, it's getting into that territory where I'm like, this looks a little bit weird. But I will say, you actually touched on a very interesting point that I saw someone tweet about midweek, which is that it's so funny when you think about it, and don't get me wrong, like, you take the Game Awards, for example. The Game Awards is a show that does occasionally poke fun at itself and does let its hair down occasionally. But it is very funny that people like Jeff Keighley have gone out there and created these products that were very specifically designed to mimic the kind of more celebratory and high-end and, celebrity elements of the film industry. Like, they wanted their own Oscar night. They wanted the night where everyone dressed up and everyone looked amazing and everyone who was everyone showed up. And it was taken seriously, and that those awards had as much kind of like importance and to them as possible, that they meant as much as possible. And that to maintain that, to make sure that the Game Awards meant something, that you couldn't devalue the process or devalue the show that much. Whereas the film industry and the Oscars are almost on the other end of that, where they're so established and so important and so ingrained in the culture of that, each of those of the film industry and the TV industry as well, in the case of the Golden Globes, that they actually can start doing weird nude former WWE star bits and like everyone actually kind of likes it. Whereas at the game side, we're like, oh no, we would never do something like that because we want to be taken seriously.
Yes, that's so true. Obviously, the one that jumps to mind with that sort of thing is Ricky Gervais effectively completely single-handedly reinvigorating the Golden Globes by just ripping, slating, and slagging off every person who attended them, which is, I get why Jeff Keighley has to sort of wants an air of respectability to sort of get to that point before he rolls it back and gets people to start taking the mick out of games.
Yeah. There are still some people, you watch the Oscars, there are still some people who take it all incredibly seriously, and you watch, the Christopher Nolans and the Jonathan Glazers of the world go up there and accept their Oscars and make very kind of, not humorless, but very, pointed and sometimes politically charged speeches. And you're like, some people did not care in that crowd, did not care for the naked John Cena bit. And they want this to be a night about celebrating the best and best in the cinema had to offer.
They did.
But I don't know. Basically, I would love to see a WWE superstar in the buff at the next Game Awards, is what I'm trying to say.
We can all be hopeful for that, can't we? But right now, we're going to have to settle for Insomniac in the buff. Mm. Exposed, if you like. Because moving on from the hack which occurred last year, that I'm sure we all remember, a bunch of stuff got released online. The hackers at the time had tried to extort Sony for a lot of money so that they wouldn't release a bunch of information that they'd got from Insomniac. However, Sony decided they weren't going to pay that and they were going to let the chips fall where they may and call the bluff of the hackers. Or maybe not call their bluff, maybe just be like, we don't care. If you're going to do it, do it. So they did release some information. We had, I think it was over like a terabyte of data got dropped onto the internet. And something which kind of was what was the thing that sort of caught my timeline the most and sort of jumped out at me the most and a lot of other people was the revelation that a cancelled Spider-Man co-op game was A, in the making and has got as far along, as far down the road that it had a very serviceable trailer. Like, if you actually watch, if you've seen the trailer that leaked, it's something that you... I think it was all right. Okay, fair enough.
We can get to it.
But I was surprised, because that's the sort of trailer that I think is almost to the point where you can release it to the public. It was looking, you know, it was getting pretty good. But yeah, so they released that, and it's given us... the idea of a game which I think a lot of us would have been very happy to see announced, me for one, it was called Spider-Man The Great Web. It was a service game, effectively had a 5-player co-op where you would see yourself and other spider peoples from other dimensions fighting the Sinister Six. Also, apparently, being able to play as Spider-Gwen, being able to play as Venom from the trailer. It made it look like he was playable in that as well. Having played Spider-Man 2, you probably know that you can play as Venom for a portion of that. But yeah, first impressions, Jamie. What did you think of the trailer? Are you sad that this is never going to see the light of day?
I mean, that ties directly into a conversation that we had last week, which is that to what extent can you allow yourself to be sad about a cancelled game or disappointed that a game that you've seen some amount of, but obviously very carefully handled and very, you know, delicately cut vertical slices of a game, when you don't know what the finished product is going to look like. Not to use the same analogy 2 weeks in a row, but I think we kind of nailed it last time when we said if we were all told that the Suicide Squad game had been cancelled maybe a year or two prior to, following its announcement, we'd be like, oh my God, you fucking arsehole. Like, you're robbing us of a Rocksteady Suicide Squad game. Warner Brothers do suck, like, just for the record, more on that later. But we would think they'd suck even more so. Little did we know, fucking 9 years later, we'd all be sat here laughing at it and getting angry about companies that may or may not have done some amount of writing work in addition to it. But yeah, and so that's a whole another kettle of fish. So I will just want to preempt any discussion here by saying we have no idea how far along Spider-Man The Great Web is or was and whether it had been any good and how justified the decision to cancel it is, regardless of where that decision came from. It could have come internally from, yes, there's some suggestion that maybe it came on high from Sony and there were budgetary reasons or the shift away from certain live service titles, but it could have easily come from Insomniac and internally, and like it wasn't meeting quality standards or wasn't hitting certain milestones regularly enough. That being said, I think the premise of a co-op multiplayer Spider-Man game is very interesting. I don't think it's a series that's cried out for co-op multiplayer, in the sense that when I was playing it, I didn't necessarily feel like I needed a friend by my side. Obviously, going into Spider-Man 2 and the premise of, for story reasons, for narrative reasons, Peter Parker and Miles Morales teaming up, I know that got some people discussing the potential for co-op there, and I guess that made sense on paper. But again, while I was playing the game, especially as Spider-Man 2's narrative kind of allows for Miles and Peter to kind of forge their own paths. So they're often intertwined, as you'd imagine. They're both Spider-Men, but they have very individual journeys that it makes sense for you to be playing as each of them at different points in that story, rather than like playing Spider-Man 2 in co-op and always being Peter and your friend is always Miles. That would make way less sense.
Yeah.
Which is why it never cried out as like a game that needed a co-op experience. The trailer definitely wet my appetite for that a little bit, especially in terms of like knowing Insomniac, some of the directions they'd probably take combat if co-op were factored in. But at the same time, the reason I didn't think the trailer was perhaps as impressive or as far along as some people online seem to think is that what yes, don't get me wrong, they had a voiceover in place, and that voiceover was done by Yuri Lowenthal, who voices Peter Parker, and so you know there would have been some consideration into you know the script and the time and the money it would have cost to get Yuri to do that voiceover, and like the trailer is well made, like it's paced and it hits a lot of the notes, but it feels like, as someone with a certain amount of experience in this field, it feels like a trailer that you make very early on when you're essentially almost still in the pitching stage of a game to try and promote the idea of the game or the significance of the game within the company, or to appeal to the people who are going to be eventually writing checks or signing off on certain amounts of money.
To kind of say that this is our vision for what the game might be, and this to give you a feel for it, like a top level kind of
absolutely
write down. Okay, that's interesting.
Well, because there are points early enough in development, sometimes even prior to development starting, where video can do more heavy lifting for you than the game can, because some things are easier to implement in video and can be implemented almost immediately, whereas the mechanics behind actually having them functioning in a build of a game and putting a controller in a director's hands, like, that's far more complicated. And so what I saw here were, you know, some very nice looking shots that were actually just, you know, a, let's call it a photo mode, but like a free cam in engine of them, yeah. You know, like some title cards, and don't get me wrong, that like work had gone into this, thought had gone into this, there's some really nice artwork in there, but also all the bits that were gameplay really looked like, and slightly more on this later, but looked like it could have been running on a sort of like a debug version of Spider-Man 2. Like, they changed the player character model and they put other players in that same, and like, we don't know how well that actually works or how that we don't know how immediately the game falls apart when the five Spider-Men, quote unquote, that we're looking at in these snippets of trailer all start swinging in five different directions across this open world. Like, we just don't know. Like, these things can and often are be held together by duct tape, because when you're making a piece of content like that, it just needs to look the way it looks and be seen by the, because it's a proof of concept and everyone understands, you know, internally that you're shooting for what this thing might look like. So reuse as many assets and mechanics and all the work that was done for Spider-Man 2, reuse that and like cheat and take duct tape stuff together in as many different ways as you can to have something that looks like the product you'd like to make. But that's what I saw when I watched this leaked trailer, was something very early,
I think,
in my opinion.
No, I think what you said makes a lot of sense. And obviously, when the fact that Venom was playable in Spider-Man 2, for a portion at least, and the fact that Spider-Gwen, the costume could have just been, the skin could have just been slapped onto, you know, like a Miles model just for the sake of making a video. Like, you don't, there was nothing there to suggest that it was actually as far along as it could have been. Also suggest that it wasn't, and we know that, for example, Sony were reducing the amount of money they wanted to spend on live service games, and so maybe actually this was an easy thing to sort of cut. And it also says to you, I think, with a game like this, I think it was described as an action adventure multiplayer open world game with in-game purchases. So exactly what we would have thought it would have been had they wanted to make this type of title. But actually, when you try and think of Spider-Man and playing that with four other people and what that looks like, I think you do get into a quite a sticky position where most of what you do in Spider-Man 2 would not be something you could graft onto a live service co-op five-player game. You'd have to whole cloth make, you know, massive amount of content. I don't know if it would have been fun. Like, I think I would have enjoyed it. In the short term, if you'd have said to me, you can be the punk Spider-Man swinging around alongside the noir Spider-Man and Spider-Gwen is there, yeah. I would have said, oh, this is amazing. But the second I'd have sort of got out of that initial mindset, I think I would have said, okay, what are we doing? And if it was, oh, we swing around until we fight Mysterio, I would have been like, oh, okay. And then it would have been, oh, and then now we're going to fight like the Sinister Six. We're going to fight, you know, Doc Ock, and we're going to fight. I would have kind of been, doing that stuff doesn't sound like it's not the reason I play Spider-Man games isn't for these like big boss fight battles and things. So if that's all I'm doing. Yeah. I don't know. I was struggling to even imagine where the fun with that many people would have been necessarily.
And I think that ties back into kind of what the trailer shows and what the trailer doesn't show. Like, I think it's also quite interesting and a little bit obvious on rewatching that when you look at the trailer, it demonstrates through gameplay in engine all the things we can already visualize. What do five Spider-Men or multiple Spider-Men look like when they're swinging alongside each other or fighting alongside each other? But any of the other big picture elements or ideas that this game was supposedly trying to capture, that's all left to voiceover and title cards. Like the idea of this being like, I know we haven't quite got there yet, but the idea of this having multiverse elements, like what the gameplay could be beyond groups of Spider-Men swinging from point to point and engaging in that same combat loop when they get there, you know, how the customization could be kind of taken up a level where they can now justify monetizing it, given the extent the current Spider-Man games go to allow players to visually customize their experience without having to put up any additional money, apart from, I think they did just add some paid outfits that are there for charity. I think all the proceeds go to charity. I don't know if that's in the game yet, but that's been announced. So that's then another very strange justification. Like, you go from a game where tons of outfits and tons of variations on those outfits, and now all of a sudden,
and like, you unlocked all of them.
You want me exactly? And now, yeah, I'm playing it, and now I'm jumping in to do a different game mode, and it wants me to pay $4.99 for like a different colorway on an outfit. It's like that gets very messy very quickly, and you just have to wonder if those are questions that perhaps hadn't quite been answered yet, which again makes games like this easier to cut from a slate. Do you know what else makes a game like this easier to cut from a slate? Is when it's on Insomniac's slate. And the other thing that we know about Insomniac is one of the reasons we're having this conversation in March and we didn't have this conversation in December, yes, of course, partly it's because this trailer specifically has been rooted out from the leaked files and shared online. But it's also because back in December, we were trying to talk about so many different things at once that you couldn't have a conversation about a single Insomniac project because we were all preoccupied with Wolverine and we were all preoccupied with, you know, Spider-Man 3 or like an interim Venom game or whatever, all these other things that were going on. Like all of a sudden, a cancelled Spider-Man multiplayer game, you just kind of almost skimmed over. And I wonder if it was the same for the people who are calling the shots, where they're like, you guys are working on a lot of things already. You're probably also working on Ratchet and Clank at the same time, because I'm sure that series is continuing in some fashion. You don't need this. Like, no. Let's just stick to what we know.
It's also, I in a weird way, I quite like this leak, though, because I did not want to get into the leak when it came, with the leaks that came out before with Insomniac, because I didn't want to be part of it like that. I didn't want to spoil it for myself. I wanted to sort of stay back from that a little bit. But then when they're like, there's a leak for a cancelled Spider-Man co-op game, I'm like, oh, like, yeah, I'm going to jump in this feet, like both feet first, because I'm like, it's not ruining anything for me. It's something which doesn't exist anymore, which has been cancelled. I can enjoy this Insomniac idea without it sort of sullying the future of anything Insomniac for me, because I'm as I'm sure a lot of people are, a massive Insomniac fan. We didn't just have this Spidey news this week, though. We've got a couple other little tidbits just to mention. Oh, so I will say before I move on, so one thing that they did say about this the Great Web was that it sort of plays on that idea, and I'm sure people that have played Spider-Man 2 will have noticed already that there are a lot of cross threads between the Spider-Verse movies, as you alluded to, and the game, even to the point where we get to see through like a portal in Spider-Man 2, we get to see into Spider-Verse. What is it? It's the bar, the pub, like in... I don't know what it's called. I don't know enough about Spider-Verse. But we get this little view into it from the game. And obviously, so we...
I just remember what you're talking about, yeah.
Yeah, we know that it is part of that universe. It does exist in some capacity. And this was going to play on that by having Scarlet Witch sort of rip portals open and other Spider-Men will be able to venture into the game universe. And that was how they were going to sort of put together the idea of a Spider-Man co-op game. Which is really cool. I'm all for more sort of crossing the lines between the Spider-Verse films and the games, because I like even playing with the, I don't know what the frame rate is, that jitters, the animated suit and stuff. I really like that.
Yeah, it's cool.
It is very cool, even though it is a little bit annoying after a while. But I also like, I wanted the noir suit, and I wanted to be able to have everything like black and noir as well. I thought that would be really cool.
You want to apply that effect to the whole world.
Yeah, I saw some people do it to some degree. They managed to do it themselves and sort of like put filters on and do whatever and get a part way there. But, you know, I'm just sad when the stuff like that. I think it's exciting to make stuff a bit weird. So, yeah, there we go.
No, it is. It's definitely cool. And their attention to detail on elements like that is It sees the series treated with exactly the type of reverence that it should be treated with, and that the fans really respond to. You know.
Yes. No. Absolutely. No. But sorry. As I said before, before I went back, there was a couple other things that went on with Spider-Man this week that Insomniac probably could have done without, because they put a patch out, which unfortunately for them gave players access to a debug menu, which they probably did not want people to get access to. We were talking before the show, there was a bit of a fun response from them, because they obviously didn't want people getting into that debug menu and taking a look too much. So they effectively told everybody, if you mess around with that debug menu, it could corrupt your saves and your game's going to be buggered. So that's how they tried to stop people having a look. Which I would like to know. I would love to know if that was true, or if they just thought that might work.
I don't know. The exact wording was, please note that using this menu could corrupt your saves and trophy progress. There is no risk.
The two things any player... Yeah.
Well, yeah, like, they also said there's no risk associated with playing the game as intended, because they basically, as you're saying, they had to cover their tracks and say, oh no, we promise we didn't just push out a patch that will break your game, but also if we do this thing that we really don't want you to do, it might break your game.
Yes. So, but that's how are we going to stop people from doing this? Tell them it'll break your game if you, and it'll mess with your saves and ruin your trophy progression. And they're like, yeah, we'll try that. Of course, that didn't stop some people getting in and having a look around and seeing what they could find through the debug menu. And people did indeed find some stuff. They found some lists of missions that aren't actually in the game. And so, of course, has given people the idea this could be linked to future DLC that we haven't yet heard about, that could be quite exciting. Also relating to another character, Beetle, who hasn't appeared in the game yet. I'm sure people would have maybe seen him from the trailer for the Beetle movie. Did that actually come out in the end?
Is that Beetle? What's the Beetle movie?
Blue Beetle, I think it was called. I'm guessing it's the same.
I think that's a very different...
Oh, is it a different Beetle dude?
Yeah. The Beetle in... Well, first of all, I want to say the Blue Beetle is DC, not Marvel.
Oh, right.
I think the Beetle in question... is, and this actually adds some
breaking news here first, DC and Marvel have joined forces to inject the Blue Beetle into
in a way that no one ever saw. Like the blue, that was the crossover that everyone was waiting, and it turns out it's
never come out.
Blue Beetle,
it came out last year.
That was like, because that wasn't that technically the first DC movie to come out after James Gunn had kind of taken the reins. I don't think he had anything to do with its being made, but
I saw trailers for it, but then it was one of those that just disappeared, and I never saw advertising for it being anywhere. I never saw... Yeah, see, I'm getting called out in the chat now as well. Rodrigo's saying to me, Blue Beetle's DC. I'm not a DC dude. Or I'm not even that Marvel, really, either, to be fair. So.
No. Beetle is just called Beetle, and I believe that I read somewhere prior to us going live on this podcast that Beetle is meant to be, I believe, related in some way to Tombstone, who is an existing character within Insomniac's Spider-Man universe.
So works there is the a carnival. Link there. Does he work? Is it the carnival he works at on the go-karts or something?
Yeah, I think that's right, because you see him getting involved in the action on when you go to, I forget what the name of the location is, but the place where the shit goes pear-shaped. And a roller coaster comes off the tracks, and Spider-Man has to come to the rescue. And he is helped by, I won't say who for spoiler reasons, but someone. A good friend of his who is experimenting and exploring some newfound abilities. There's an image going around on Twitter, courtesy of someone called Jizay. I say it like that because there are two Y's at the end, so I presume that's the intended pronunciation of like a menu where the heading of which is Beetle villain arc, and it has I think dead links to what could be missions or cinematics called things like Beetle Janice intro, Beetle construction, Beetle convoy, Beetle boss. Again, like with everything we're saying that come, well, actually this hasn't come from a leak, this has obviously come from a mistake that Insomniac has made, but like with all of this stuff, we don't know if those are like old files that are referencing material that was in the original game and was cut. We don't know if this is a future DLC. We don't know what it is. But we do know that it's there. And this isn't a case of, you know, hackers rummaging around in places where they shouldn't be. This is a case of Insomniac pushing out a patch that allowed individuals to access a debug menu that also let you do things like getting whichever trophies you wanted, including the recently released trophy before completing for completing New Game Plus, you could just get it to pop that for you. People messing around with God mode, and even to weirdly tap into what we were talking about with some of the other potential playable characters in that would-be multiplayer game, you can access characters like Venom, MJ, and young un-Spider-Man Peter Parker in free roam. And there's no, as far as I'm aware, there's no additional kind of goings on there. It's not like when you start free roaming as Venom, he's got like a swinging mechanic that we never saw in the game. I believe it plays the exact same as his sequences in the main story did, but you can still just sort of do that on demand. So there you go.
So yeah, but obviously they didn't mean to do that. That was a bit of a mess up for them, but bit of fun.
Was patched. I mean, if you're listening to this, it was already patched like 4 or 5 days ago, so it was almost immediate.
Yeah, for that, it's got to be the sort of thing that you can probably patch so quickly that you're just like, oh, I do you know how I feel really? I feel just the dude who left it in. I feel so sorry for that. Go on.
Yeah. I was going to say, it's interesting. Your first thought is feeling sorry for the dude that left it in. My first thought is, what the fuck was the dude who found it doing with his controller? When you have to, like, I can't remember which combinations of buttons you had to hold down and press, but it was some weird thing, like being on the main menu and like holding down the touchpad and pressing the, and it's like a bit like the first person to ever milk a cow. Like, what?
Congratulations.
What were you trying to, like, what was the end game here?
I've got this tasty drink out of this cow. And you're like,
White shit came out of this fucking cow's udder, and I'm drinking it, and you guys are going to drink it too. And get this, in years to come, you guys are going to have these sweet grain-based like things that you eat in the morning, and they're going to be so dry, you'll have no choice but to douse them in this white stuff.
Cow juice. Oh, yeah.
In cow juice.
Anyway, let's move on from cow juice. But no, yes, that is the goings on with Insomniac in this past week. But hopefully, for the sake of Insomniac, you know, we won't see anything too crazy in the future with leaks. I do feel sorry for them for their leaks and stuff. But they have had some good news, Jamie. It's not all been bad stuff for Insomniac. It's not all been things that weren't supposed to happen, because something I'm sure they were very glad that happened was they got 9 nominations at the upcoming BAFTA Game Awards for Spider-Man 2, which I'm sure they were incredibly happy with and deserved as well. Like, Spider-Man 2 was a fantastic game, so great to see them doing really well in the nominations. Also, especially given that they did get a little bit of, I don't know what the word is, they maybe were a little bit underserved with Spider-Man 2, a little bit. We talked about this last year, and a lot of people said, I was one of them saying, Spider-Man 2 is fantastic. And a lot of people saying, it wasn't as good as list of games that came out. But it was a very good game. It was very enjoyable. So I, for one, am glad that they've got so many nominations.
Don't get me wrong. I think I am glad that they've got so many nominations. And I think in some respects, it's a game that almost lends itself to maximizing the amount of nominations that one can get in a show like this, because of course it deserves a nomination for technical achievement and animation and artistic achievement. Actually, it didn't get nominated for artistic achievement, audio achievement, and so on. You kind of get the idea. It lends like we were talking about the Oscars before we went live, when we were talking about Oppenheimer and how we knew that it had won Best Picture and that Christopher Nolan had won Best Director, but then you kind of go down into the weeds, and we were looking at how it also won, I forget the individuals, any of the individuals' names, but it won the Oscar for Best Score and Best Cinematography and Best Editing. And sometimes when you have these kind of tour de forces in any medium that just kind of nail it in every single category, that you end up with something that kind of stands incredibly strong in its own 2 feet. And yet still sometimes, in spite of how strong it is, and in spite of the fact that it is in many ways more than the sum of all its parts, there are still things that become more special. And like for me, like I'm looking at the other big sort of scorers from the BAFTAs, and it was Alan Wake 2 and Baldur's Gate 3 each have 8 nominations, and Tears of the Kingdom has 7. Alan Wake 2 is a game that, like, I'd be hard-pressed to say it looks better than Spider-Man or sounds better than Spider-Man. It doesn't run better than Spider-Man. It's a much better game than Spider-Man. Like, do you know what I mean?
No, no, absolutely, absolutely. And it's something catty more than the sum of its parts. And I think that absolutely can be true in video games. But I always think that Spider-Man 2 became a bit of a victim of that in reverse. Like, it was very good in a whole load of areas, but the thing you ended up with at the end was a very, very good video game. But everyone just kind of went, "Oh yeah, it was the game I was anticipating, and I played it. It was fine."
Spider-Man 2 is like an 8 out of 10 in almost all categories, and as a result, the final product is an 8 out of 10. Alan Wake 2 is like between a 6 and a 10 in all categories, and the final product's a 9, you know? It's no shame on Spider-Man. It's just the way we're... And if you're going to tell me that people going into the Game Awards, and the kind of people that vote for things like the Game Awards, we'll see if it's the same for the BAFTAs, I'm more into or more moved by Alan Wake 2, Baldur's Gate 3, and Tears of the Kingdom than they were by Spider-Man 2. I absolutely believe it. Are there Sony fanboys out there on social media and YouTube who will have you believe that Spider-Man 2 was one of the only games worth playing released last year, and that Tears of the Kingdom was solely for Nintendo virgins and Baldur's Gate 3 barely exists? Yes, those people are out there. But their opinions, as loud as they can often be, mean very little in the grand scheme of things.
Absolutely. Well said.
Can I also say, Jonesy, just looking through these BAFTA Game Awards nominations, one of the weirdest categories, British game, which sounds, yeah, that's something that the BAFTAs do for film and television, I get it. But when you read out the nominees, you're like, maybe we don't need to do this every year. For as hard as people have tried, the nominees for British Game of the Year, Cassette Beasts, Dead Island 2, Disney Illusion Island, Football Manager 2024, Viewfinder, and Warhammer Age of Sigmar Realms of Ruin.
I suppose they have to have that as a category, because it's like, you know, it's the British award, so they need a British category. But that is a very strange.
I don't even know who the winner is there. Maybe Viewfinder, just for how unique that, you know, that main concept is. I know a lot of people did like Cassette Beasts, but
it is a strange one. Also, how do you get included in that category? I want to know. Like, is it just that it was by a British developer? Was it published by a British company? Was it like the majority of the people who worked on it are you? One dude knows someone who's from the UK. Like, I'd love to know how.
I think it would have to have been developed by a British developer. Yeah, and I think a lot of the big time British developers are all kind of like between projects at the moment, like Playground are between projects. Rocksteady, we don't need to talk about. The guys who are making Hyenas, they just went through all the shite that they went through. It was a complicated year for the British games industry.
Next few years should be good, though. Evidence. Next few years for British devs will be good.
Let's see. Yeah, it depends when Fable comes out. Let's wait and see. What
well, like we're gonna have GTA 6 at some point. Hello Games,
actually, you're absolutely right.
There's gonna be some. But I think I'm kind of with you. It doesn't need to be there every year. But then is that mean to the work to the crapple?
But it also feels like it's cheating if that's like a category that you only bring back when it's been a good year. Like, GTA 6 came out, so let's bring back the best British Game Awards.
Like, this is our year. No one else released a game, and they're like, we're not doing it this year. that would suck, wouldn't it?
I'm just looking, like, again, if we're in fight between, like, Creative Assembly, whose name escaped me earlier, and Frontier, Rebellion, Rare, Media Molecule, like...
There's a lot of good companies.
If we're firing on all cylinders, and you know, we got it down, but for now we're being shown up by the likes of Finland. So
fair
shout out to them, I guess.
Maybe it should be a changing country, like we do it. We pick out a specific country and we do it like that.
Estonian Game of the Year.
Yeah, why not?
It's just Disco Elysium every year.
a very good game. Anyway. Let's move on to talk about some other not good games but good people, Jamie, because I want to give a shout out to some very special people. These are people that support us week in, week out. They are our patrons who've gone over to patreon.com/supershow and decided to support us over there. They have dipped into their pocketbooks. I don't know what a pocketbook is, but I hear old people say it, and so it sounds good. They've dipped into their pocketbooks, their wallets. to their purses, to their handbags, their pockets. Found a bit of scratch and sent it our way, and we are always grateful. It keeps the lights on, keeps us coming back week after week. So thank you so much to all of you. There are some names on screen right now of these awesome people, but I would also like to give a special shout out to some people. So I'm going to give a shout out to Aaron Cameron, Athletic Gravy, Brimstone, Ice Knock Rock Salt, Jesper Camden Nielsen, Pastors Guild, and the big dogs, the members of the board, is Brett Z, aka Shellshock, Geometric Potter, Hacksaw Book Reed, Manuel Guerrero, and Peaswad. So thank you so much to all of you. Thank you also to everyone who is watching live with us, who is chatting, who is putting up comments, who likes the videos. With all of that stuff helps massively, I'm sure you know. And to the people as well listening on podcasting platforms. If you felt so inclined that you wanted to give us a review or rate us, preferably with the more stars the better, feel free to go over to your podcast platform of choice and just tell them that you like our stuff. So that's always nice.
It's always a difficult ask that. Like, yes, please review the podcast, but only if you're going to review it positively. It's like, I'm sure some game developers wish they could do that. It's just send out review code to all the outlets and say, write the review, look at the number at the bottom, and publish it if it's above an 8 or equivalent.
What's the thing?
Not just, you know, leave it in your My Documents folder and pretend you never played the game. It's fine.
Well, it's that thing of, my parents said, if you haven't got anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. It's from the same school of thought. Someone who, I don't know if this counts as saying something not nice, but that was the only segue that I could attempt, and it wasn't very good. It's Warner Brothers, specifically, yeah. Jamie, Warner Brothers Discovery, because is Warner Brothers now called Warner Brothers Discovery because they've like bought the Discovery Channel, or is this specific brand of Warner Brothers? I should have checked this when I wrote this down earlier on. I probably should have checked that before, just thinking that it was... I thought I'd just wing it, to be fair, mate. I'm still a bit fried from being in another country today.
No, that's absolutely fine. So Warner Brothers still exists, but its full name being Warner Brothers Entertainment. But its parent company is Warner Brothers Discovery. The trickle down is you would have something like Warner Brothers Motion Picture Group, which sits under Warner Brothers Entertainment, which sits under Warner Brothers Discovery, which is the big dog. And they own things like HBO, TNT Sports, CNN Worldwide, and of course DC Entertainment.
They do, but for the sake of this story, we're going to be talking about the fact that they do also own now Adult Swim Games, which they purchased a while ago. And they own the publishing rights to games that they've published in the past, or at the very least, they own the listings that they have on Steam. And they decided, for whatever reason, that they were going to do something a little bit interesting if you happen to have your game be published by them on Steam. They were going to delist some games that they had. Specifically, we're talking about Sound Dodger Plus, Fist Puncher, Small Radios, Big Televisions, which that has actually already been delisted on Steam. So what's happened is, with the decision to delist these games and with this decision not to have them on their storefront anymore, the studios who own these games, who made them, the developers who obviously don't want that to happen, they don't want their games to be delisted, have been a little bit, I suppose, shocked, surprised, aggrieved, a bunch of other terms to effectively mean that they weren't very happy. So they've reached out, a number of them have reached out to Warner Brothers Discovery to effectively ask what is going on, and to see if they can themselves host their own games on Steam, to which they haven't been given a very good reply, unfortunately, from Warner Brothers. So what this was a bit of an interesting story, Jamie, because we were thinking it was a dry ass week, but then I think we both read the article for this and we're thinking, like, this is actually quite interesting. This is a small games. A lot of people may never have heard of any of these games, but still go for it.
No, I was going to say, but you're right. Absolutely. No, I feel like the fact that they are smaller games and smaller, you know, independent titles actually means, yeah, there's perhaps more of a reason to spotlight these issues and talk about it, because it's funny. We've spent so many episodes of the podcast this year, especially, and some of the, you know, the final months of last year, talking about, you know, you know, consolidation and the way the industry was changing, and the knock-on effects of that, you know, layoffs and studios shutting down. And, you know, we came, even coming into this podcast, we could have talked about, you know, you, Chris, and I were texting about Deviation Games, you know, 4 years into their journey, obviously having not announced or released anything yet, but now shut down by Sony. You know, you could go the gaming adjacent side and, you know, Rooster Teeth and everything that's going on down there, and, you know, them essentially having to do that live stream where there were, it was very clear that there were still a lot of questions that their audience and community had that they themselves didn't have answers for, and they were the people going through it in real time. And there are echoes of that in this story. And do you know what, it even taps into what we were talking about last week when it came to piracy and video game preservation and, you know, and emulators and, yes, and the, obviously the situation with Nintendo and usually the Switch emulator. Because this creates another, you know, preservation situation where, you know, now small developers, people, you know, who talking about games in some cases that they developed many years before, prior, and may have kind of left behind in any significant way, these games are now being delisted. And when they only existed on digital platforms, which is going to increasingly be the case, you know, as the years roll by, you're essentially talking about a game disappearing. And I think what's really worrying about this is that, you know, we can talk about certain games and their developers like Sound Dodger and Fist Puncher that you mentioned, who have heard seemingly or have had some communication from Warner Brothers Discovery about what's going on, have had some kind of warning about this, and have been able to engage in some kind of discussion about what their options are, whether it go, when it comes to essentially saving their game's life in a digital capacity, albeit not particularly fruitful conversations. There are still so many other developers out there and so many other games by extension that haven't heard anything. We don't know what's going on. I mean, we were both looking at this Rock Paper Shotgun article earlier that kind of goes into this in great detail. And they've got this list of games at the bottom that are all possibly at risk. And you look through it and it's like, you don't know if they are or not, because these people haven't heard from Warner Brothers. No. And the other thing that we're talking about is, when these people perhaps are given that notification or that heads up that, hey, your game's going to be delisted from Steam in 60 days, we don't know how these individuals are going to respond to it. And we've seen people respond in different ways. Some people are making their game free. Some people are saying, you know, basically good riddance because, hey, here's, in the case of, I think it was Sound Dodger Plus, like, hey, I've already made a sequel, so please just go and support me by buying that. But that might still result in a game that, again, fundamentally, unless you get into weird like legal quandaries, kind of doesn't exist. And anytime we're talking about that, in no matter what size the game, it's a sad reminder of the sort of the state of the industry when it comes to video game preservation. And a really, once again, for the second week in a row, but if you want to stretch back to Suicide Squad conversations, how long's a piece of rope, it's another week where it's a really bad look for Warner Brothers.
Yes, no, it doesn't look good. Even if you've never heard of any of these games, even if you've never played them, I think just hearing that Warner Brothers are doing more rubbish stuff.
Could you read out that quote from the Fist Punch developer? Because it's, again, like, I don't know, yeah, the quote speaks for itself.
Yeah, no, just to set this up. So this is from Matt Cain, who is one of the developers of Fist Puncher. So what here, he said that they, he said, we've asked that Warner Brothers simply transfer the game to our Steam publisher account so that it can stay active. But so far they have said no, with the reason being that they made the Universal decision not to transfer the games back to the original studios and do not have the resources to do so. No, the transfer process is not complicated. It likely takes about 2 minutes on their end. So a number of people who are going through this issue have sort of mentioned the fact that what you can do on Steam is you can effectively transfer the publishing from one Steam publisher to another. And so they're asking Warner Brothers to do that. I think some people have had not heard back, but Warner Brothers have effectively said, yeah, that if they do it for one, they would need to do it for all, and they're not about to start doing it for people that asked for it to be done, because then they would have to do it for all, which does then suggest, as you said, that this is not just three games they're going to delist. They are going to be delisting loads or everything they've got from Adult Swim, because otherwise, why would you get into the weeds of saying, hey, look, man, if we're going to do it for one of you, we've got to do it for all of you, and we don't have the resources? Because that's just like, well, but if it's only three games, That's not a lot. It apparently takes 2 minutes. It's three clicks to do this on Steam.
Three clicks, yeah.
So why would you be complaining? You surely got the resources for that. But it would sound like actually no, responding to all these different developers, studios, whatever is going to be a lot because there are going to be more delistings, which sucks. Ironically, we have had something similar happen to us in the past where we were delisted and now do not exist anymore. And you know, talking about doing a lot of work which then doesn't ever see the light of day again is kind of shit.
Yeah.
And we, funnily enough, had similar conversations about, well, could we do this or could we do that, or could this be a workaround, or could we settle this that way? And some of the pushback we got from those questions and requests was, we don't have the resources to help you with that problem because of the, you know, the scale of what that would involve. To which, like, on a granular scale, you know, when it comes to the people that we were actively communicating with, you looked at and you were like, fair enough, that is a lot of work. But on a large scale, you look at the company we were talking to, essentially, when you think about it, and you're like, please don't talk to us about resources.
Yeah. We know if you wanted to, you could do it super easily. But you just, yeah. I think the problem with some big companies is they're effectively just like, it's just we just can't be asked, and it's not worth it to us. It's too small fry, so we're not that bothered. You could say that there is somewhat of a silver lining to it when you're talking about games disappearing completely in this instance anyway, because apparently these studios could republish their games themselves on Steam if they removed any associations with Adult Swim or Warner Brothers, literally removed any mention from anywhere. They could relist these games, but they would effectively be relisting them from the get-go. So we're talking no wish lists, no reviews, no link to the game as it was previously linked on Steam. So they'll be starting again from like the first step, which I can see why that would suck, and that you wouldn't want to do that, especially if you're you know, if you've done a lot of hard work to get people to you know, have access to games on Steam. It's also, even if you made it free, because obviously we've said some people decided to make these games free. If you didn't want to make it free, you've then got the issue of, well, how do you, I wonder if there's almost a sense of like, how do you get people to believe this is the legitimate version or this is the game?
Right, yeah.
Because that's
like, how many issue. Yeah, how many ears and how many people does a story like this reach? And then all of a sudden, you know, you look at the games that are at risk, like there are big like licensed games out there that are potentially at risk that, don't get me wrong, I'm sure for something like Rick and Morty, virtual Rickality, like something will get figured out. But it's the thing that gets figured out is that it does get re-uploaded or like relisted on Steam as a new listing. Like you said, no reviews, no wish list, no nothing. And all of a sudden, someone with no knowledge of the situation goes to buy Rick and Morty, virtual Rickality, and thinks, hang on a second, what's going on here? All the art's right, but there are no reviews. It was listed to the store, listed on the store this year, especially given what happened with Helldivers a couple of weeks ago, where there were those fake Helldivers 2 listings on Steam that had, like, again, identical storefronts, identical art and trailers and screenshots and all that kind of stuff. And yes, they got shut down pretty quickly, but a lot of people would do double takes. And maybe then they'd look into it, figure out what's going on, it would be fine. But yeah, from what I understand, not being a developer myself, but developers, and especially smaller or independent teams and studios and individuals, put a lot of work into these Steam pages and reviews and wish lists and all these things, you know, mean a huge amount to them. And I think whilst yes, you could always make the argument, okay, yeah, it's still going to be on Steam, you can still, you know, benefit from it financially, when you know that you are 2 minutes or three clicks away from just having all of this circumvented and having it tied to your publisher profile or whatever it is on Steam, I can't imagine the frustration that you'd feel having to go through all this again and having to get rid of any mention of Adult Swim in the process. And in some cases, that might be, I don't know, there might be an Adult Swim Games Presents at the beginning that you have to get rid of. But there's also talk about having to get rid of any Adult Swim Games team members in your credits. So now you're taking people who might have published these games, in some cases, like a decade ago. Adult Swim Games have been going for a long time, and saying, hey, you remember that game you thought you'd never touch again? How about going back into it and like opening up that project and rewriting its credits and like, you know, and you're just sat there going, really? Is this necessary? And like, these aren't, and I want to stress as well, like these aren't all like tiny games that you've never heard of. Like there are games on this list that I've like paid money for myself. Like, you know, where was it that I was looking at where they've got comments from the developer of Westerados? I can't remember where it was on this page. But Westerados double-barreled, saying it's the designer of it, John Gottschalk, saying, "It sucks to learn your game is going offline like this. We're trying to get it transferred from Warner, but we'll have to see what's possible." You know, anyone with games IP and publishing rights experience in the Netherlands who has any tips, get in touch. Like, I can't imagine how isolating and frustrating a situation like this feels like. Especially as you agree, you sign a deal and you give up some amount of money or freedom or whatever to partner with a publisher for these reasons. Because you're a developer, and they help with the promotion, they help with the listings, and they help with storefronts, and they help with sales, and to have the rug pulled from out from under your feet, horrible feeling.
We should say that. So even as you can probably understand, a whole load of people that have had games that published by Adult Swim who haven't been contacted by Warner Brothers Discovery to say that this is going to happen to them, effectively are now in a position where they're like, we know or we think this is going to happen to us. So now they are in a bit of a panic because they are saying, like, it's not really a question of if, it's more a question of when. So they're now trying to sort of figure out what to do, and they haven't even been contacted yet. And like I said, people that have been contacted, it sounds like they've been given effectively like 60 days, and it has literally been a case of 60 days, the game's gone, there's nothing you can do about it, except for, as you said, go into the game, remove any mention about Adult Swim, blah, 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 anything, and then you can relist it, and no one will know it's yours. Or it's the original, I should say. So it's a terrible situation. It's really crap for the people that have made these games. And it does give a lot more credence to the idea, as we were saying last week, that actually are people that upload games in some capacity, emulators, you know, people that give people access to games in different formats and different ways, are they doing the Lord's work, Jamie? In some cases, they may be. In some cases, they're the devil. So, you know.
The test of time will be in 100 years' time, where the shape of the video game industry will be unrecognizable compared to what it is now. And, you know, being nostalgic for a Nintendo GameCube by that point won't even be on the same, you know, on the same radar as people who are, like, nostalgic for, you know, an Atari 2600, or like, it's impossible to imagine how different things might be. And yeah, the people who are going and doing the work of collecting all these things and archiving all these things and making sure they're safe and sound, I think we will come to celebrate them. I mentioned Rooster Teeth there for a second. I'm not like a Rooster Teeth fan, and I haven't consumed any of their content on even a semi-regular basis for probably north of a decade now. But I did look at the subreddit just out of sheer curiosity when that whole situation was going down. And it was interesting to see how many posts on that subreddit were people kind of coming together and beginning to collaborate on storing and saving and archive as much of that content as possible, but out of the sheer worry that it might just disappear from the internet one day. And the fact that more and more people are beginning to think that way, and that it's not malicious, and that I don't think these people are looking to, you know, benefit from, you know, abusing the copyright holders and so on and so forth. I just think these are people who don't want these things to disappear, and we will absolutely, you and I especially, Josie, in our old age, when we're 90 years old, and we, like, the internet is so fast that we can download a PS5 game in 3 seconds and emulate it on whatever fucking mobile phones look like by then, we'll be extremely grateful that work was done. As I regularly am now when I go to, you know, look into emulation of consoles, even from, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago. So
it does become very important. And like I said, we've been touched by it a little bit in some capacity. And it's a very strange thing to have spent a long time making, creating stuff, putting it out there, seeing it do very well, being removed from it in some capacity, and then effectively just being like, oh shit, that doesn't exist anymore. And I think you nailed it when you said, look, some of these people made these games like 10 years ago, and the fact that they're not about to go back into it and jump through a bunch of hoops in order to make it available again. It's a bit of a sorry state of affairs. But there we go. I hope a lot of these people can figure out, you know, to the best of their ability, can sort out some way to, you know, service their fans or and themselves. I'd be fair, it'd be good if Warner Brothers had just turned around and said, yeah, we'll do this. We'll link back to your own Steam store for these games.
Yeah, like part of me hopes that like these like snippets of quotes that we do have, admittedly secondhand from Warner Brothers, are just the cases of like individual people from certain departments of Warner Brothers who don't really know what's going on or what the plan is, but have been like giving like very loose answers based on what their managers just whispered into their ear.
Right. Yeah.
And
yeah.
and we're seeing that stuff, you know, trickling down, and that maybe now more stories are emerging, more people are aware of it, more outlets are covering it, and more people are worried about their futures and haven't heard firsthand. Warner Brothers are like, actually, this is a bad look. If nothing else, even if we are doing this, even if this is the plan, we need to get a hold of this. We need to let everyone who's affected know simultaneously, and we need to make the messaging and our reason for it be as clear as possible. Because at the moment, this is like, you know, you get those horror stories where things like this happen during layoffs, where people are like, oh, I think I'm being laid off, but I don't know. I'm going to work tomorrow to find out if I'm one of the people, because my company laid off 600 people yesterday out of 1,000, and no one's been told if they're one of them. Like, that, yeah, it's just not right.
It isn't. But, as the games industry still seems to reel and struggle with a bunch of different things, including layoffs game delistings and all sorts. Do you know what's funny is that I would have liked to have a positive news story to finish on, but we've only got two news stories today. And then I suddenly did think that actually there was a somewhat positive news story that I should have got some screenshots and shared them with you before and got your reaction to, as you've probably already seen them. But I've seen a bunch of stuff from Stellar Blade in the past week.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure you have as well.
And then even that was really kind of, again, I don't want to sound like the guy who puts a negative twist on everything, but even that was really weird because, so did you see that, Stellar Blade was released, a demo was released momentarily on the PlayStation Store, and people were able to download it and access it. Then it turned out that demo was released prematurely for one reason or another and was pulled from the store. But it wasn't just pulled from the store. People also had their digital rights to it, whatever you want to say, pulled in the same way that something that happened like with PT. So people were sat there and like you might have been halfway through that demo and it's just like, oh, you can't play this anymore. And that was locked. And for some people it was like, again, without sounding like the person who's just here to, you know, to spread fear amongst the audience, it was like another weird reminder that, you know, these digital people who run these digital storefronts, Sony and PlayStation in this case, can pull the plug on your account and anything you own at any point. It could be like, oh, that game you just bought? Yeah, you're not going to play it anymore. Bang. The application closes. You can't open it again. And I think we always knew that they could pull the plug as instantly as that if they needed to or wanted to.
Yeah.
But to see them just kind of like do it and you go, oh, it didn't matter that I downloaded that game. It didn't matter that it was all the content downloaded and installed onto my hard drive and that I was it didn't even matter that I was playing it. At any point, they could say, hey, you don't own that software. You're leasing it from us, and that lease just ended. Get the fuck out the house.
Know what the reality of the situation is. Although you did say that they released it prematurely, I'm gonna say that having looked at some of Eve's outfits and some of those jiggle physics, I think I think they can be forgiven for doing anything prematurely around that. It's
Well, you waited for it, folks. It took an entire hour, but we got the cum joke, the trademark Josie cum joke.
Oh, trademark! That's a Chris special right there. I thought, you know, just the Chris.
Hey, thank you. I was a bit late on it because see, you were premature. I was late. I was the one where you were early. I was the one where it was taking so long that it started to actually get a little bit floppy, and I was like, can I even come? I'm not 100% hard anymore. And it turns out you still can.
You still can, but I wasn't thinking I was going to play Stellar Blade, but I don't know, some of the gameplay from that, from the leaked demo, I'm thinking maybe I will have to play some Stellar Blade. I just think the gameplay looks very good.
I can't tell if you're being seedy or not anymore, because
I am being,
okay.
I am being seedy.
In a genuine and not seedy thing, I also heard some pretty positive feedback on the demo, like lots of people saying that it plays somewhere between a platinum game and a From Software game, if it's not too hard, it's a pretty nice balance for me, I'd say.
Yeah.
You know, having liked things like Nier Automata and, you know, Bayonetta and you know, those kinds of games. I don't mind a little bit of soulsiness in my games.
A little bit, but not too much. I don't want too much soulsiness. Yeah. I want enjoyable soulsiness without being frustrated.
Right, exactly. It was the same with the previews for Rise of the Ronin were released, say, the final previews. I think outlets are, I don't know if they've played more, but they're allowed to talk about their first hour and a half to 2 hours with the game. And there it was like, yes, it's still very much a Team Ninja game, and it is quite a lot like Neo, but also it has difficulty selection, and that perhaps Team Ninja are trying to make the most accessible ones of those that they've ever made.
Right.
And you know what? I'm going to go ahead and say it, and this follows on from conversations we had about the Star Wars Jedi series in the past. If that becomes a trend of in the future of like, hey, we're going to emulate as many things about From Software's work as we can, apart from the oppressive difficulty, while still maintaining an engaging kind of like structure, because I understand that lots of people think that the difficulty or the challenge and overcoming said challenges is obviously a core part of the formula. I'm not trying to underwrite that element at all. But like, that does kind of suit me quite a lot as someone who has fallen off more From Software games than I've seen through.
I'm with you 100%. Yeah, totally. Yeah,
there you go.
100, mate. But with that, this has been a tight and compact super show.
Are you still talking about...
no, I'm not.
Stellar Blade.
I'm not talking about Stellar Blade. I'm talking about how... It wasn't that dirty. It was tight and compact and pretty clean. There we go. I'm going to say it wasn't.
How jiggly was this podcast?
It was pretty jiggly. It was pretty jiggly toward the end, especially. But no, thank you so much for joining me, Jamie. Thank you for being the co-host with the most, as always. Thank you to everyone who joined us in the live and in the chat. And thank you, everyone who's watching this later on or listening to it later on. So there we go.
I promised to play more WWE or so any WWE 2K in the next week. So hopefully, if the Stellar Blade demo drops for real, Jonesy can fill you in on how sweaty that character gets, and I can fill you all in on how sweaty Seth Rollins gets. So stay tuned.
Sweat test next week.
It's a content that people have been asking for. How glistening do the tits look on the Stellar Blade character and also on... I'm trying to think of like the fattest person in the WWE who's like not retired or dead. Let's not go there. Well, I don't know. Vader.
All right. And with that, I guess we'll see you next week. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you soon. Bye.
Bye.